Welcome to Your Right to Speak's discussions on social justice and advocacy. This is episode 28, and I'm your host, Salvatore. On today's episode, we will be talking about youth justice. We'll be talking with my colleague, Elena, who is at 4 Youth Initiative. I've recently just taken a new position here as a youth incubator case lead. So I'm very excited to have Elena on the show because I do think youth justice is a very important topic to talk about. And it's something that I've longed to want to have on the show for quite some time now. Elena, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hello, everyone. As you said, my name's Elena. I'm a youth justice case lead here at 4 Youth Initiative. I have a background in social work and a passion for, I guess, social justice. So that's why I got into this position. Originally, I did my placement here and everything just lined up and here I am.
Well, thank you, Elena, for being on the show. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I know we do get busy here at 4 Youth Initiative, so thank you again.
Oh, no problem.
I guess we're just going to dive into the questions. Mm-hmm. What are some of the gaps in the youth justice sector, and how do you think we can go about changing the system as a whole?
I mean, there's a couple of things that I could see that needs to be changed. First off, I think the youth themselves, because right now I should say I work with a youth, the youngest I've had was 12 years old, up to age 18. I do work with youth over the age of 18, but for the most part, they're under, and if they did turn 18, they were charged when they were 17, and now they're 18. But I feel like it's a lack of education in a way, that there's a gap, that youth these days don't know what you can get charged for. They don't know their rights, and they don't know the next steps, and they don't have the support. And it's not even they don't have the support. I don't feel their parents fully understand the youth justice system here as well. I'm not sure how extensive you're taught about it in high school. I don't know if you recall learning about your rights and what you can and cannot say and what you can get charged for. So I don't recall learning about that. So I think that's a big gap. So once they're put into that situation and they're charged, they feel like they're a criminal, then they get arrested and then they get a lawyer. So like the whole process to them is scary and they know nothing about it. And I don't feel like there's enough support systems in place for them to know what to do next. What else I can think of? I don't think there's enough community organizations as well for them to provide support. I think just overall they need some type of support or education.
Right. And that kind of goes into our second question about the education sector. So I'm just going to follow up a bit of what you said and then we'll touch upon education, which I know is both of our passions. You're saying that they need more education about the rights and stuff, and I do agree. So do you think that should be implemented in the school setting, or should there be, I don't know, we have like the provincial advocate's office. Should they be doing workshops or something on educating young people? Like, where do you think this education piece could fit in?
Definitely both. I know the TDSB, for example, hasn't changed in forever. I don't want to say years. So it's hard for them to implement change, or even having someone come in and do workshops, I think, would be extremely beneficial. Right. I mean, they do teach law. Maybe it's the law that, you know, is not really important. I don't say it's not important. All Canadian law is important, but I don't think they're gearing towards youth specifically and what they may go through in their everyday lives, right? For a lot of the youth, especially in our community, if you can ask 10 youth, I don't know if I can guarantee, but I'm pretty sure 8 of them have been stopped at some point by the police officers. Do they know what to say? No. So they let them do what they need to do, and then I'm getting a charge for something that shouldn't even have been started in the first place. Or do they know that if there's a fight going on outside and you're just a bystander, that you can get charged as well? You can. So
I didn't even know that.
Exactly. Wow. So you're to be charged with assault, and you didn't actually blow the punch, but you were there and you didn't leave the scene. So I think that's another thing that's happening. So they don't know, but our generation likes to record and be around, and they're going to sit there and they're going to watch, and not knowing that if a police officer comes around, they'll get charged.
Right.
Also, the education system, I'm going to keep saying support, because in the school, they're trying to change from the zero tolerance policy, but I still feel like it's very much implemented. Because if a youth, for example, is struggling in school, they're disengaged, or maybe they're late all the time, they rather suspend you than actually help you, because they don't have the time, and maybe they don't have the money or the patience to sit down and be like, hey, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. You've been late this week, or you haven't been doing well in your classes. What's going on? And I don't know if they're not asking, or they just don't care and they don't have the time or the money to have that. So they're like, oh, go talk to your guidance counselor. I've asked every single youth that I've worked with if they talked to the guidance counselor, and they looked at me like confused. Like, one, the guidance counselor is who you talk to for school, post-secondary. Two, I cannot relate to them. Three, they can't help me.
Right.
So you have a guidance counselor in school who's supposed to support the students, but none of the youth feel like they can talk to them. So then that's a problem within itself. So I'm just going to give an example. So I have this one case where this youth was getting bullied for a couple of months. So this youth got so angry one day and punched the bully. So what do you think the school did?
In my experience, the one being bullied got punished.
Exactly.
Sure.
The one being bullied got charged, handcuffed at school, and brought directly to the police station, then had to do community service hours. So from my point of view, if he goes back to that school, how do you know he's still not going to get bullied again? Did anything get resolved? Nothing happened to that bully. That bully could be going on to other kids doing the exact same thing. So I feel that if the school took the appropriate steps instead of calling the police right away, I would have sat him I would have sat them down and said, hey, like, what happened? What's going on? Oh, you're being bullied? Since when? What are the right steps? Do you need support? Why would I charge you?
Right,
and that person is probably emotionally distraught.
It kind of sounds like you're saying that the school sector, or not school sector, education sector needs to have some sort of program or service in place that when you do make bad choices unknowingly, that we sit down with them and talk about, you know, this is, if you continue going on this road, this is where it could lead you.
Yeah.
Right? And talk about different strategies to help change, I guess, the road that they're on.
Exactly. So there is no strategy, there's no support, and they don't have any restorative justice. So they're like, okay, I'm just going to suspend you or expel you, and hopefully you learn your lesson, and you're supposed to come back a whole new person.
Right.
Make sure you don't make the same mistakes again.
I mean, in all honesty, you know, I was bullied in high school too, and I never punched anyone in the face, but I mean, I took my revenge in other ways, right? I mean, it happens every day, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a point where someone being bullied feels that they can't do anything but to act upon violence, because they're kind of, you know, cornered in a wall. Or not in a wall, in a corner. You got me.
No. No, exactly. And I don't know how it's going to change, but that alone, I think, is a problem. And also that all the youth that I work with have been charged already, then they're referred to me. Let's say out of 10, 8 of them are not in school at that moment. So is it that them being suspended or expelled from school made them more likely to be in conflict with the law? Or are there a bunch of other barriers at home or in the community that's going on that they need more support? So I think it's a lot of things. It's community, it's the school, and then our justice system. So it's a couple of things. But I do feel the school has an impact. What happens to the youth?
Yeah, and it sounds like at its current state, it's having more of a negative impact than a positive one, because they have this, although they're taking away their zero tolerance policies, I guess atmosphere, that mentality is still built within, we can say, at least the TDSB.
Yeah.
So I just want to touch a bit on you talking about guidance counselors. And do you think that guidance counselors' roles should change a little bit, or their training should change a little bit, to take into consideration some of these aspects of youth justice?
Most definitely. And I don't know, I can't speak for the TDSB board, but I feel like most of the guidance counselors have been there for years.
Right.
And they're out of touch, and they don't know the new, I don't know, I don't want to say they know anything. I'm so negative, I'm trying not to be, but there's a lot to learn. A lot of things have happened. The city has changed,
right.
Youth have changed, communities have changed, and I feel like what they have learned in school did not change. So kind of like anti-oppressive practice, I don't know if they were taught that before they were in social guidance counselor, and beforehand, to be a guidance counselor, all you have to do is be a teacher.
Right.
So what if I just majored in English and now I'm going to be a guidance counselor? What kind of support do...
Right.
So it's like, yeah. What are you going to do to help me?
So it sounds like you're alluding to that possibly maybe social workers or child and youth workers mm-hmm. should be more into that guidance counselor role.
Yes, most definitely.
Because we have that, I guess, specialized training to work with young people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense to me.
I don't know why it hasn't happened yet. Going there to turn the light bulb for everybody.
Right? But. So hopefully, you know, someone from the TDSB is listening right now. I want to touch a little bit on, because you talked about, you know, young people or youth getting stopped. Mm-hmm. Right? And I want to bring in some profiling here. Mm-hmm. So I know that was an issue. A year or two ago, I believe, there was a huge research study that was done and it was in the news all over the place. Mm-hmm. Do you find that has changed after that whole media blowout or?
No.
Right.
I mean maybe they change the way they go about it, but it definitely still happens. And again, the youth still don't know their rights. Right. So they can be stopped and say, by default, they had a little bit of weed on them, but originally mm-hmm. they weren't stopped for that. But because of being searched and so on and so forth, they found that, they ended up being charged. Mm-hmm. So then it's almost like we did something good. But the youth don't know themselves that that can be thrown out if they were stopped unlawfully for no reason.
Right.
Right? But it does happen. And the problem is no one reports it because the youth don't even know, okay, something just happened to me today. Where do I go to talk about it? They don't know. And I asked, we had a presentation yesterday about a few lawyers came in and talk about your rights as youth. And I asked too, like, you were stopped, you were searched, patted down, backpack open. I'm like, what happened after? He's like, nothing. What'd you do? Nothing. Who'd you tell? No one. If something were to happen, do you know what to do or the next step? No.
I mean, in all honesty, I wouldn't know what to do. It's a scary feeling to be stopped, right? I mean, I even get nervous if I get a speeding ticket, right?
It's nerve-wracking when you get pulled over and you automatically freeze up, you feel criminal.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they run, but, oh, you're running, you're hiding something. They're like, no, they don't have a relationship with you, and they get scared.
Yeah.
Especially in the media, all you see is negative things, right? So they're going to come to you, you're not thinking, oh, we're just going to have a jolly conversation.
Yeah.
You're scared.
Of course, yeah. So where do you think... where do you think that information could be? I know we talked about more in the education system, but I think it would be hard to fit it there. It makes sense to me to fit it there, but I can see the struggle for some people to make that link.
Yeah.
So do you think generally we should just have organizations that are dedicated to rights education?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even just have one class. All you need is, right. I don't want to say all you need, but like that one class can make a huge difference.
Right. It makes sense to me. Yeah. I, you know, back in my Humber days, we had to do a workshop or some sort of community initiative, and me and my classmates and friends, we did it on discrimination. Mm-hmm. And we did it in Humber, Lakeshore surrounding area, which there's been some youth justice issues there as well. And one of my classmates lived in the area, and she was saying that for her, and I'm telling you this because you're going to be so happy about it, that we should do a workshop specifically on what to do when you get stopped,
mm-hmm.
right? And what that looks like. So it's one thing telling youth about, you know, their rights, but what do you do when you actually get stopped? Because sometimes it is more easier. And it lessens the situation to just kind of comply sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, how do you handle these different situations so it doesn't get you charged or, you know?
Yeah, and I think that is definitely beneficial to do scenarios and examples and try to make it as real life as possible, because we can always say, I want you to say this and do that. That's not what you can do, especially in that power structure.
Exactly.
When someone's coming to you, you're going to feel intimidated, you're going to get nervous. You might say something, all of a sudden they tell you you're being hostile or to calm down, and you are calm down, and all of a sudden you're obstructing justice, and then assault on an officer. Like,
the list goes on and on.
Very quickly. So, yeah, I would definitely think that could be done. Or run all the schools. That'd be amazing.
So you touched a little bit upon, and you mentioned restorative justice. Mm-hmm. So what are the pros and cons to using restorative justice?
The pros, I would say it's helping the youth be accountable for his or her actions, and to empathize. And I think to see things in a different, I wouldn't say different light, but from a different perspective. Because at that time, especially for youth, you know, their decision-making part of the brain's not done yet. They do things on impulse a lot of the time. So they may take something from someone, for example, and not realize the impact it had. Or so I think being able to sit in a circle and look at the victim and their parents, and you get to have a better understanding and empathize with them why your decision maybe wasn't the best decision. And together as a community, as a group, you come up with a resolution. So in that incident, we're not treating you as a criminal. We're as a support team saying, well, what can we do to help you and the victim so we can be where you want to be? And I think giving them an option or a choice and having the victim have what they want to have. Mm-hmm. Because some of the victim doesn't want to say, I want you to have 100 hours community service. They might say, I want an apology. I want you just to feel or understand what you did to me and why I'm hurt. And sometimes the person who's taken accountable can realize, like, oh, yeah, I really did mess up. I hurt not only that one person. I hurt the mom, dad, the sister, and the whole community in itself. And I think it's important for that person to learn to give back as opposed to just, like, I don't know if you get charged sometimes, like, do 10 hours of sweeping.
Yeah.
You're going to start your cleaning. That's not...
You're not learning anything from them. Yeah. Are there any cons to restorative justice?
Yeah, I would say con is depending... Not everyone's open to it.
Mm-hmm.
On the more severe charges, it's going to be more difficult, I think, to have certain conversations. And I don't know... Depending on the charge, whether you can come up with a resolution that fits everybody.
Right.
If that makes sense. I don't know how to explain it, but I think it works to a certain extent. If the charge is more severe, I don't see.
Right. And I was going to ask that because I was reading on restorative justice a few weeks ago. And one of the things that came up was when both people have to want to, you know, be in that circle or else it's not going to work.
Correct.
Second, it does depend on the type of action.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to use a very extreme example. I'm not saying any of our youth do this, but let's say they murdered someone. Restorative justice in that case may or may not work.
Mm-hmm. Are you asking if it may or may not work?
Well, I don't know. Do you agree? I don't know.
It depends. I've heard stories that they did restorative justice not to have a resolution, but the person was already charged with whatever. But I think the family of the victim wanted to know why and wanted them to feel what they felt.
Right.
And in that situation, it happened to work, and that person was extremely, like, that I felt bad, I'm sorry, I apologize. And I think that's what the family wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have remorse? Do you understand?
Right.
But on the other hand, if it could go completely terrible.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't have remorse.
And then the family is just, you know,
it'll be a shit show.
Yeah. And I should mention, too, when you do restorative justice, doesn't necessarily mean you're charged. So I said charged, but just means something happened. Let's say you stole something from someone and now you're choosing to do restorative justice as opposed to going through the court. Process. So then you'd bring that, saying, this is what we're doing instead. Is this okay? And then they'll decide, just to clear there.
Thank you. What advice could you offer new workers that are entering the youth justice sector?
To focus on empowerment, to be that listener, and to empathize, and always to advocate. But a lot of the youth I think I've been working with, I have similar questions I ask all of them all the time, like, what are your strengths? What are your good qualities? And you'd be surprised how majority of them don't say one thing, and they have no idea.
Right.
So it just goes to show their self-esteem, where their head is, where they're coming from. And yeah, it's kind of sad, so you have to be strong, but you have to be able to empower them to realize what they can do, what they're good at, what are their strengths, and that they have options, but they themselves at that point don't know it. So I think you just always have to be that person to empower them and then to listen to what they have to say. Because sometimes you'll sit down with them and you don't open your mouth at all. You'll just sit there and you listen, but that's what they need. And to, I guess, stay strong, because they're going to hear a lot of stories that you wish you could fight the world and change. But we can only advocate so much and do so much, and the law is the law, and we can't change it. We may not agree with it. Sometimes it's so strict on something that's a minor thing. For example, someone got in a fight with their friend, and the person turned 18 already, and now they're facing 3 months house arrest. This kid is in school, got a part-time job, coming to a program and doing so well, but like that little decision, and it hurts me that he's going to be charged as an adult and possibly ruin his life, depending what he wants to do,
because
he'll have a criminal record over something that's so small. So you can't let those things affect you and like tear you up inside, but it's reality, so just stay strong, but be that support system for them and empower them.
So in your experience working in the youth justice sector, what is, or would you say is, one of the most important things you've learned so far?
That they're all amazing. And I try not to come in with any prejudgment or whatever, but you know when you see someone who's been charged and they're coming to you, you automatically think like, oh, they're up to, and like, you don't, but like, you know, it's just, you might think, oh, what are they doing? They're up to no good.
Yeah.
But once you sit down with them and you realize you just made a stupid decision, and they have so much great things about them and so much to offer the world. And there's so many amazing qualities that they may not know at that moment, but by the end of the session, they know. And you can see the change in them from the beginning of someone with low confidence, no self-esteem, to the end product when they're re-enrolled back into school, or they have a part-time job, or realize, you know what, I'm really good at cooking, and maybe this is something I want to explore, and I didn't think it was something that I was good at. So, yeah, that's what I say. I was like, it must be really hard working with those type of kids, you know? I'm like, it's actually amazing. They're amazing. They're funny. They're smart. Mm-hmm. They're just caught up in certain circumstances that they can't change.
Right.
Right. We can only help them so much in these doors, but once they leave, we don't know what's happening outside.
And it sounds like a lot of the work that you do is not just helping youth navigate through the system, but it's really building relationship with them and doing, I don't know a good word for it, but like social service work with them, right? And I think that's so important, because I do think that some people that work within the sector particularly just see it as, okay, I'm going to try to get them off their charge, and don't really build that relationship with the youth. So I find it refreshing.
It is. Yeah. And then you come in, I'm like, what can I do to help you? I'm like, you're not in school, we're going to get you in school. You need a job, let's do your resume. You're going to get a job. I'm like, you want to do a program? You're interested in this? This is happening. Go do it. So it's not just your charges. It's about what else you have. Because the charges don't define you. Everything else about you does. And let's figure it out, and we'll find out what it is. Good with the charges. We'll work it out.
Yeah. We're coming close to that end. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to ask you what has apparently become my trademark question. What does advocacy mean to you?
It means a lot. I feel in my position, I don't say that's all I do. That's a big part of my job, is to advocate and be their voice, because a representative voice, because right now they don't have much or any voice, whether it's in school, whether it's in the court system, and having someone there in their corner to advocate for them, I think it's something that's really important, because who knows, they might not have anybody and they just need that one person. So, for example, I got into, always have examples, but
they're good. They're good examples. I like them.
One person was expelled from school because they were skipping class a lot, and a whole lot of other things were going on, but they expelled them. Went to find out that the mother passed away recently, single father, trying to take care of all the kids, and just disengaged youth. So they expelled the youth without asking any questions, and I had to go advocate for that person to the TDSD board to withdraw that and to get that youth back enrolled in school. And if I didn't do that, this youth would have been lost through the system,
right?
And nothing would have happened. They say, go to your alternative school. Side note, every one youth I've ever asked said they hate alternative school. Not alternative, it's called safe school. Sorry.
Okay.
They send you to a safe school when you're expelled, and they're like, I hate it. So, for example, That's what I was saying. So you have to be there to advocate for them because they don't know what to do. And they need a support system. And that's what I'm hopefully here to do and to speak up for them so they can be what they want to be and everything they can be. So I think it's very important. And I will try and advocate for each and every youth I'll ever work with. And you better not tell me anything because I will tell you something.
So it sounds like for you, advocacy is not only, what I'm hearing is, it's not only just a part of the work you do. I'm getting a sense it's a part of living for you. It's a part of your being, right? Yeah. And it's also, you know, really, it sounds like you're really trying to help a young person navigate through their life, right? So that they have those supports built up for them so they could have more of, I don't want to use that word, but more of a positive, you know, you get me. Yeah.
No, and it is because they might not even see that positive light. Right now they're in a certain situation where everything's just going wrong for them and they don't even think those other things is an option. Right. So it is kind of, I don't say pod, but we'll both figure out a better word for next time. It is,
Well, I think it's a good way to end. Do you have anything else you would like the listeners to know?
Let me think. I don't know. Just never, I don't say don't judge our youth, especially from various communities, especially the community you currently work in. And you're going to learn to love every person that comes in this building. And we have to not judge someone by their cover, but see what else is going on in their life and what other barriers they're going through, whether it's barriers in their community, at home, so it's educational, financial, a lot. It's everything. So imagine having that many barriers and then they're still able to like put a smile on their face and try and be positive. So I think that's an amazing thing. And I always tell them that whatever your decision made that brought you here, it doesn't define you as a person. And as long as we remember that when we see people, don't be like, oh, those are kids, they're bad. They're not bad kids. They're just in a certain situation that they don't know that they can get out of.
Right.
And that's when you have more organizations and more support for them. So if your school kicked you out already and you can't find a job, then I don't know, the likelihood of you getting college is a little higher, right? But people are not looking at that. You're going to say you're not engaged, so therefore you're a bad kid and that's why you're expelled. So no. And anyone who's listening, you have some money for nonprofit organizations and Youth Justice, let me know. Let's have a tour. No, hit us up.
I'll put a link to FYI under
FYI,
like the
I think
description.
You need organizations like this everywhere. And
So just for our listeners, you say in our community, what community is this?
Your Southwestern community.
Thank you. Just want to clarify that.
Yes.
And that is a community in Toronto for those listeners who are outside of, I guess, our province. thank you again for taking the time out to speak with me. Your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. If you are a child or youth that would like to be on the show, or if you have an idea of what topic we should be talking about next, please email me at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.